Interesting what you can find out on the internet, isn't it? Oh my goodness. So, a ritual to change your life. This is a season of rituals. It's the season of Hanukkah and Christmas and other festivals and presents and food and having family or friends travel to you or the other way around or maybe both. All of that stuff. And some of those rituals are designed to get us connected and to feel good. And then there are other little rituals that we kind of maybe didn't plan on that we do anyway that actually make us feel worse. So I want to pick up a little bit on one of those because it can be, it's a simple thing. Now, a ritual to change your life, I mean, just the title of it, you can tell it's not going to be pain-free, right? There's going to be some discomfort or it wouldn't really change your life. And this stuff starts when we're really young. So I was 14 years old one year, way back in the 20th century. And me and my family were on vacation in the summer. It was Aspen, Colorado. They had a physics institute back then. They may still do. And I was on a three-day hike with my sister and some other kids and a guide. I think he was probably in his early 20s. And my parents thought it would be really great if they could take their three children and send them on a three-day hike, and that way they could like actually have a weekend to themselves. They thought this was a great idea. They didn't really think about the fact that me and my sister really had never hiked, and certainly not all day, and certainly not 3 days straight in the mountains, you know, 6,000 feet up. So halfway through the first day, my ill-fitting new boots began giving me little blisters and stuff, and I began to complain. I began to complain in a way that a really articulate UU kid with a big vocabulary could complain, to the point where nobody wanted to hike near me. And after lunch, I found myself still complaining to nobody in particular, and I actually got to the point where I became sick and tired of hearing myself complain. Boy, was that an eye-opener. One thing that I learned then, and again later on, is that the more we express something, the more we kind of focus on it. So you can express something positive, and you can be talking to a friend about something that's positive, and your friend will say, well, oh yeah, do you mean this? And so because language is this imperfect thing, we use it a lot in order to get much more close to whatever the heart of the matter, the kernel of the thing is. And so it's natural that whatever it is that you're focusing on, you're going to invite more of. So, well, you know, this really hurt. Well, how did it hurt? Oh, that's terrible. And then other people will do the same thing. You can be standing around with a group of strangers, and somebody can say something negative, and then other people, in solidarity, wanting to be friendly, will also kind of heap on to the negativity. But it also works when you say something positive. And so it stands to reason that if we could learn to quit complaining. Now, I'm not saying that you complain, but you probably know somebody who does. If you could quit complaining or really reduce it, you would become happier. And when you become happier, the people around you are inclined to become happier also, and you can feel more abundance. And that is where this purple wristband comes in. And I happen to have brought some with me, and they're up here on the altar. And this says, becoming complaint-free. And it says becoming because it's a present tense thing. Very rarely does someone walk through a one-way door and stop complaining forever, because usually it means they're not talking for one reason or another. So complaining. Everyone complains. We complain about all kinds of things. Well why? Why do we do that? Well, we complain when we're disappointed. We complain, we criticize, we gossip. Maybe we're unhappy about something or someone, and we feel helpless to change it. I mean, if you really feel helpless to change what's going on in the world or this country, then the one thing you could do would be to complain about it and let the people around you know that you're not just settling for the status quo. And when we have recurring complaints, particularly about a spouse or a family member or something else, there could be something else going on. And if you were ever a child with parents around, you probably noticed at some point, maybe early adolescence or sooner or later, the faults of your parents. Suddenly, they weren't as perfect as they made themselves out to be when you were 5 or 6 or 7. And for me in particular, I noticed the faults of my father. I really noticed them, and I vowed not to repeat them. And so I was pretty aware of that. But then one day, as an adult, after lunch with my then wife and my mother, I began talking to my then wife about my mother's faults, just these little annoying things that for some reason didn't seem to bother other people all that much, but they just drove me up the wall. And I couldn't quite understand why these little things that, you know, didn't seem to bother other people really just rubbed me the wrong way. And it was all I could do to just bite my tongue and not complain to my mother, "Would you just stop doing that?" And so my then patient spouse interrupted, which she very rarely did, and said something that just leaped over my defense mechanism completely and entirely in an undeniable way. And she said, "Well, you're complaining about these little things about your mother because you have the exact same faults." Like the water of truth was just thrown in my face, and it's like, absolutely true. I had the exact same faults. Now, there's this Methodist minister who came up with this idea of becoming complaint-free, and he says that complaints, particularly about somebody that you're related to or care about, is noticing the faults in them that exist in you. In other words, one of the reasons I was so good at noticing these little tiny faults in my mother was because I had them too. I was an expert on those faults. Bowen says, "You will find the things that upset you about others are traits that you share with them. Noticing it in other people is the universe's way of inviting you to recognize it in yourself and heal it." What? Heal it? He says, if you want to point out something negative in another person, do some digging and see if that negative thing is also within you. And then you can be grateful for the chance to now be aware of the shortcoming and heal it within yourself. Okay, so this person does something annoying, and I'm about to complain either to myself or maybe, heaven forbid, on social media. And I can, rather than complaining, which, you know, I feel every right to do it, it's like, well, do I also have that same thing in me? And if I do, maybe now's an opportunity to work on that, the whole log in my eye, mote in her eye kind of thing. And don't forget the opposite. When you notice the good things in other people, when you notice that these musicians that you're playing with are good, that's kind of the universe's invitation to say, well, maybe you have some of that goodness in you too, and maybe this is an opportunity to let that flower. These positive traits or characteristics, whether it's music or art or something else, just being a caring person, you may feel that they lie deep below your surface, but they are very likely in you. The things that you admire about another person is probably in you also, even if you don't feel that in touch with it. If you pay attention to the qualities that you admire in other people, these same qualities can open up in you. Another thing to remember about this whole complaint thing is that it's usually reactive, right? It's reacting to something we don't like. But to notice the good things in other people, to admire the musical skill or talent or artistic talent, or to admire the caringness that somebody shows, you have to like actually pay attention. So it's not reactive like with complaint. You have to be proactive and look for things to admire, to be grateful for. And that can be a spiritual practice. Now, when our author, the guy who came up with the purple wristbands, who was a minister, he would travel down a certain road, and his particular church happened to be near a beach. Imagine that. And so he would take this road down to the beach, and he saw one day this handmade sign that simply said, "Honk if you're happy." Right? It's a little road. It's not a big highway. And one day his young daughter was with him, and they both saw the sign. And she said, "Daddy, are you happy?" And so he honked the horn. And from then on, whenever he noticed this sign and whenever he drove near it, he would get a little happier and he would toot his horn. And one day, because he was a minister, and ministers can just, you know, walk up to anybody and start talking to them, he decided he was going to go visit the house nearest the sign. So he drove up there. And he knocked on the door, and there was an older man who invited him in, and he said, "You know, come on into the house. And by the way, you're not the first person to knock on the door." And the older man indicated that his wife was in the next room, and she was in an actual hospital bed in the next room, and she was dying of ovarian cancer. And not knowing what else to do, having every right to complain bitterly, but not wanting to just do that, they decided to make a sign. And sure enough, in conversation, every couple of minutes, they could hear in the distance a horn honk, a little toot. And this made that couple smile, because they knew that someone was on the way to the beach or vacation, and that they were driving along happy, and they just saw this little reminder on the sign to say, "Yeah, express that you're happy." And it made them happy to know that there was happiness in the world. In fact, the road was streaming with people who were happy. However briefly, in that moment, they were happy. And you can be too. What you focus on, you invite more of. When we talk about negative and unhappy things, we will notice them more, we will receive them more. Whatever you do invites those around you to do the same thing, and when you focus on the positive, you invite others to do the same. And when we stop, or at least try and reduce the amount of complaining we do, we become happier people. And that is one of the secrets to becoming a happier person and influencing other people to be happier around you, is to stop complaining. And complaints, you know, they serve a purpose, or we wouldn't have them, but they can also be a missed opportunity. We complain because we suffer some injury, a physical injury or an emotional one. We may feel, as I have in the past certainly, that we are not getting the love or the respect or the attention that we deserve, and so it hurts. And because it hurts, we complain. "She's not loving me the way I want to be loved. What is wrong with her?" That's a complaint. But here's the missed opportunity. When we complain, we try and pass on our hurt, pass on our anxiety to whoever happens to be listening to us. And the pain is real, that's why we're complaining. But there is another way, a scarier way, but ultimately more satisfying way to deal with hurt like this. Instead of complaining about the other person and how they're doing or not doing certain things that are making you unhappy, you can take responsibility by being vulnerable. By opening yourself up, we can say, "Ouch, I feel hurt. I feel like I am not getting the love that I want. And I don't know what to do about it." Hear the difference between those two? Complaining tries to pass on the hurt. Vulnerability opens up the soul. Okay, but what about injustice? We Unitarian Universalists are pretty big about social justice. And one of the objections to stopping complaining is that it seems to say we should not complain about injustice. People who are prophetic, people who work in social justice a lot, have often been prompted to work in a particular field by getting angry or disappointed at current conditions. And they complain, and by complaining, they get that anger up, and by getting that anger up, they get the motivation to go out into the world and make changes. And so they don't really want to become complaint-free, because that's the fuel to their fire. Does becoming a complaint-free person mean accepting injustice? Absolutely not. No. When I think about the great leaders of the world, the great leaders of this country, it seems to be true that they were not people who mostly complained, even when they had every right to. Martin Luther King Jr., he had this great speech over a half a century ago, and in that speech he could have complained. He could have complained about 2 centuries of slavery, another 100 years of segregation. He could have spent the whole speech just detailing the lynching, murders, and degradation of his people, our people. But he didn't. And his speech, well, what was it called? It was not called, "I Have a Complaint." It was not called that. And it was not called, "I Have a Beef." And it was certainly not called, "Americans are cowards for not talking about white supremacy enough." No, it wasn't called any of those things. And you know what that speech was. That speech which marked a turning point in American history, in world history. Every school child knows the name of that speech. That speech was not, "I Have a Complaint." It was,
I have a dream.
Exactly. You hear the difference there? From dissatisfaction of racial and poverty conditions, Martin King came up with a vision, a dream. His focus was not on what he didn't want to have happen, but on his vision, on our vision of what this country could be if we lived up to our own promises. What you focus on, you invite. He focused us on his dream. Someone told me Mother Teresa said she would not go to an anti-war rally. She did not want to dwell on what she did not want to happen. She would, she said, go to a peace rally. Can you hear the difference? Anti-war rally, peace rally. Rosa Parks did not sit in the back of a bus complaining about how she was being treated. She saw a vision where people of color and white people could sit anywhere they wanted to on a bus. That was her vision, and she began to enact it. So yes, of course, we must call out injustice. But rather than merely criticizing, complaining, or grumbling about it, we are called to live out our faith, deeds, not creed. So acting in a positive way to bring about the future that we dream of. We are not called to complain about injustice. We are called to work for justice. So most people don't think that they complain much. They really don't. In fact, when the founder of this movement would get requests for these purple bracelets, they would often be accompanied by a note. The note would say something like, "Oh, my coworkers really need these." Or, "I have some family that's coming from the holidays. This would be the perfect stocking stuffer for them." But it turns out that we are mostly not aware of how much we complain, even though the people around us are. Complaining is like bad breath. It's much easier to notice in other people than in yourself. Complaining is almost always about the other person. Vulnerability is about me. Vulnerability is about yourself. That woman who was dying in her home by the roadside near the beach, she had every right to complain. Dying of cancer in her home, but what did she do? She put out a sign to remind herself that there is happiness in the world. There is, and it is streaming by you day and night, and you can open yourself up to that. You can feel that love. You can feel that sense of peace, that sense of peace that passes all understanding, if you just make a practice of opening yourself up to it. So I've decided to take the author up on this challenge to becoming closer to complaint-free. And here's how this challenge works. After the service, you can come up and pick up one. And it's got to be for you. Because if you were to pick one up for somebody else, you're complaining about the fact that they're complaining too much. You see how that works? So just one. So there's kind of three rules to this after you just pick up one. When you catch yourself complaining, gossiping, or criticizing, you move the bracelet from one wrist to the other. It's just a simple physical thing. And what that does, first of all, is it lets you know how much you complain. Now, if you're like me, you'll be pretty good for the first, 15 minutes. Or, for me, getting in my car and getting on the road with those other drivers who just, they don't drive the same speed. They either drive too fast or too slow or whatever. And so when you catch yourself complaining, now if you're being vulnerable, if you're saying, you know, I really don't feel good about myself, I'm not quite sure what to do, that's not a complaint. That's being vulnerable. If you say, I don't really know what to do about him, I'm not sure what to do, he is just a real pain in the... That's a complaint. And most of the time, you'll know. And if you don't know, and you tell a friend or a spouse or someone else who's traveling with you in a car or in the grocery store or wherever, they'll let you know. So when you catch yourself complaining, gossiping, or criticizing, you move it from one to the other. If you hear someone else who is also wearing a purple bracelet complain, it's okay to point out their need to switch their bracelet, but you're going to have to do the same thing. Right? Because you're complaining about their complaint. Rule three is stay with it. Spiritual practice, a life-changing ritual, does not happen overnight. It takes many months to reach. The goal is 21 consecutive days. And that's because someone years ago wrote that it takes 21 days to make a habit. Now, I think people now say it takes fewer or longer, but 21 days is really a magic number. If you can go 21 days in a row without complaining, you will notice some changes in yourself before you even hit that 21 days. And the reason to switch it from arm to arm is to make conscious what's normally an unconscious behavior. I did this exercise a number of years ago, and I usually have to repeat it every few years, and I quickly became very aware of how much I was complaining, and I was doing a lot more than I thought I was. And the bracelet worked. I gradually cut way down, and I eventually got to 30 days in a row of being complaint-free. Of course, I don't think I complain much now, but leaving this bracelet on for 21 days will be a challenge. It will test my deeds, how I actually behave, and not my creeds, what my beliefs are about myself. It's a real-life test. And when I did this for the first time, I discovered something, and you may discover this too if you take on this challenge, is that there were times when I became quiet. You know that saying, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all? That really worked. And that quiet, that noticing that I was about to complain and then not complaining and being quiet with it, that felt like a blessing. Just that small thing. Be the change you want to see in the world, says Gandhi. Becoming complaint-free is a way to do that. So I invite you to take the challenge, and after the service is over and before you leave for the day, pick up one for yourself, or don't pick up one at all, and begin your journey toward becoming complaint-free. And now, let us rise and sing number 352, Find a Stillness.